Captain.
Who has not yet been to the board? Dr. Demarest, take the blue pen.
I grabbed this pen. Is it really orange, or is it just...
I don't think I did get it at all.
Pens that look orange.
Is it really orange?
It is. I wasn't sure.
I have an orange pen. I love it. It's, you know, orange.
Maybe I should try left hand on the whiteboard. It's not readable as my right.
Maybe I'm tired.
Because there's like this example on my book.
Kid, if you could do that, you could like write in half the time.
That's true multitasking.
I'd be mega impressed if you could write two things at the same time.
I think I've seen that you like put
something. Well, I think a guy cold on two computers.
I type on two computers.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So are we doing the function?
Yeah, give
of the
us
sentence
the
and all that.
Part of speech and function of the sentence. And I, if you guys will do something like this, Matt Dodd gives a good example. He does. He does that on every single word, even where it doesn't apply. So, part of speech function in the sentence. Oh. He has a slot for both, which makes him come up with the function of the sentence for everything. A lot of you guys are leaving off your direct objects or your objects of prepositional phrases. You'll put noun, but you'll forget function in the sentence. And you'll get it right in your diagram, but you need to make sure you label it. So, you know, if there isn't a function in the sentence, what Matt does, he just repeats the part of speech. Like if it's the main verb under function in the sentence, he just writes again main verb. You could do something like that, or you could put a dash. But if you just make sure you're accountable, when the point totals come from, here's how I'm scoring the points. A point for every thing around a prepositional phrase, a point for every bracket around an applicable clause, and then 2 points per word, one for the part of speech, one for the function in the sentence. So if you'll make sure you have a slot for both, and you can put a dash if it doesn't apply, but make sure you're, because some of you guys are leaving off the function in the sentence.
Okay, so...
What?
All right, so we got a... the subject here, and the subject is so that is a noun, and that's the subject, and then do love is the verb, so is this the helping verb?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is the main verb, and not modifies the verb, so I'm guessing, guys.
Yes, or wrong.
So cheer and jeer as
cheer and jeer.
Way to give him confidence while he's up there.
Definite article, noun, direct object. Or this is a coordinating conjunction, is that right, guys? That's what
somebody
I said.
Somebody help me. Or? That's what I got.
Okay, yeah, I had nor.
We'll fix that later. Why is nor? Another definite article.
Does NASB say nor instead of or?
Yeah.
Does that change the part of speech?
Oh, did I?
No, it would have helped me to recognize.
Does it say nor? Did I copy it wrong? Does it say nor?
Nor.
Nor. Okay, we'll fix that. The thing, okay, so this is a noun.
It's 1 point now.
I'm already toast. Okay, of the world. That is a prepositional phrase. So we got a prep right here. Is that what we say? Yes, prep of another definite article.
Defart?
Yeah. World.
That's awesome. Cassidy, can you rewind that and scratch?
Is this a subordinating conjunction? No, okay. Where am I at there? Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, you know what I forgot to do? I forgot to do this.
Good.
Okay, so.
Cassidy, can you scratch the swear words too?
Okay, so.
Just people now. Does Cass actually listen to these?
Some.
Anyone, so this is a pronoun?
She's the second.
Anyone loves the world, I believe, is a clause. We'll fix that later if I got it wrong. This is another main verb, or verb, whichever. Another definite article. World is a direct object. So, there we go. The is another definite article. Love is, here it's a noun. Of the Father is another prep, I believe. So this would be a preposition, definite article. Noun. The Father, I'm still learning how to do this. This modifies the noun, so it's adject. I don't want to relate to that. Is not in him, so let's see. This is a verb here, and not modifies not in, okay, so let's do that. This first. I've not done this before, so we're guessing here, guys. And then not.
Okay, great. Let's walk through these. What about this? Agree? Subject?
Yes.
What part of speech?
Are we supposed to put that?
Yeah, you should supply that. If you supplied it in your diagram, you're okay. Go ahead and supply it in the text so we can give it the part of speech. Let's just call it a pronoun.
Oh.
And subject. Okay? Good. Adverb, main verb. And if you want to do a Matt Dodd, you do this. Just to make sure you have two items for each word.
Can I ask you why? I mean, I know I should know this. That's a pronoun because it replaces a noun, right?
Yes.
Well, and what is the noun it's replacing?
Steve. Good. Good. That is a great question. And that's one of the things that we'll talk through in our steps of how to interpret. But you must identify the reference of all your pronouns, meaning what does this refer to?
I mean, I would have thought you was good enough just on my own. So
it replaces me?
Well, you know, or generally you. Or okay. I don't know why... Is that fine from the context what it's replacing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And that becomes very important. And we're supplying to you here because the command, doesn't supply it in the imperative. But it's, especially with commands, it's going to be really important for us to find out who the you is. or we might try to apply the wrong kind of things to us or to somebody else or whatever. So yeah, that's a contextual decision. Definite article, noun, direct object. You guys agree with that? Coordinating conjunction, direct article, noun. What's the function in the sentence here of things?
Direct object.
Direct object of the verb, right? Okay. Yeah, this is an adjectival prepositional phrase, modifying things. What kind of things? Of the world things. Object of the preposition. Right? A number of you guys are doing that. You're putting direct object in your object of the prepositions. Make sure you put object of the preposition. And it's one of the questions you ask, is this, you know, sometimes we don't know, is this word a preposition? There are two things a preposition must have to help identify it, right? It must have a prepositional phrase, and in that phrase it must have an object of the preposition. If you don't have a prepositional phrase or an object of the preposition, it's not a preposition, it's something else. So that helps you identify. So make sure you have your OPs in there. And since we have multiple clauses, let's put brackets around all of our clauses. Do not love the world nor the things of the world. Anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. What's the subject of this clause?
Anyone?
Bueller? Anyone? Yes, it is. Anyone. And what is the subject of this clause?
Love.
Isn't that, marking out prepositional phrases is so helpful? Because you might be tempted to say, the Father is not in him. Right? By proximity and word order, you just read that, you go, yeah, the Father is not in him. But the problem is, these words are off limits. You can't take words out of a prepositional phrase and make it do something else. Remember, this whole thing is functioning as an adjective. You can't take a sliver of an adjective and make it the subject. Right? It's off limits. So, love is not, rather than Father is not. Okay? Good, Scott.
What about if?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. This can be a conditional particle or a subordinating conjunction. We may use both of those phrases, but subordinating conjunction, if you have it as that, that's great. And what we're going to do in our diagram is supply, this is an if-then statement, we're going to supply the then. Right in here. Okay.
And so we can do that.
You can do that. Anything you supply, you're going to put in parentheses, and I've got a special symbol that I use for conditional sentences, because they're pretty common. So if you were creative and showed that relationship somehow, that's great. I'll show you what I do with that.
Why is that subordinating and not coordinating?
The if?
Because really all I get about that is, for the most part, is you invent the subordinate.
Yes, that's right.
Because those are two independent thoughts, aren't they?
Well, that's the question. Can one exist apart from the other? Are they just coordinating in the sense that these two things are just statements? Anyone loves the world, and the love of the Father is not in him.
No, the if.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This if is going to...
You mean from the main clause?
Well, do not love the world, nor the things of the world, and if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Those look like they're completely independent.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, those two are coordinated thoughts with no conjunction in between them. This if, this subordinating conjunction, is actually subordinating this clause to that clause. Okay. It's describing this relationship. And we'll bring that out in the diagram.
Thank you.
Great question. And thank you for allowing me a second response.
Well, I need it.
As opposed to my first answer, which is
it means that it was sin.
But it went then against me, so it doesn't count.
As I'm grading, you probably noticed each verb is worth 4 points, 4 possible points. identifying the verb as worth one, and then you get each for the voice, tense, and mood.
Okay, so I said we have do love. Do love. So it's present. I hope that's active, and it's imperative because it's a command.
Everybody agree? Present, active, imperative?
And then we have loves. Where is that? That's right here. That's the verb for anyone, so it's going to be anyone loves. I think it's going to be anyone loves. Yeah. And then, so that's present, active, and conditional, so it's subjunctive.
Okay. Yeah. Do you guys see what Scott did there? He called it present, active, subjunctive. If you call it present, active, indicative, that's okay. The verb itself is simply in an indicative form. A subjunctive form will say may love or might love. Don't erase it yet, Scott.
Okay.
Should love, could love, can love. One of those like statement of possibility helping verbs in English.
Okay.
However, what you've done is so often in Greek, the conditional sentences will use a subjunctive form of a verb. I don't know in this case whether it is subjunctive, but it may very well be in the Greek behind it. But you picked up this conditional idea.
Okay.
So the verb form is not accurate. So we would technically change it, but if you put subjunctive in there because you're picking up the conditional idea, just excellent observation.
Okay. And then we got is, so there's no tense in that, so it's present and the indicative mood.
Yeah, there's no voice. Yep.
Present indicative. The one book called that stative?
Yeah, it's a stative verb. Same
okay,
thing
so
as a state of being verb or a to be verb. Yep.
Okay, so we're going to say that we're going to do this.
So don't put voice for...
Don't put voice for to-be verbs.
Or if you put stative.
If you put stative instead of active or passive, oh, that's fine.
So we don't want to love the world.
Did we go with adverb or not?
Yes. If you put particle of negation, that's okay.
If you did that, yeah, I'll
say if you put that, you're a teacher's pet.
Eric needs to put that then.
I put it as an indefinite pronoun. That's what the book is.
Okay, so.
What?
Yeah.
Anyone was an indefinite pronoun.
The grammar book that?
Yeah.
That's great, and that's fine. If you just put pronoun.
When I don't know, I put what the book said. So. Most of it's just copied straight out of the book.
And what would that mean, indefinite pronoun?
Reference not there.
Yeah.
Well, every pronoun means the reference not there.
Not specific?
Yeah.
It's not
just
definite.
It's not definite.
Yeah.
Anyone, someone.
So you have no idea what it is.
Yeah, there's a difference. with this one?
Not definite.
Well, words mean something, right? This one, this you could replace with actual people, like James's readers, right? His audience, whoever he was intending. This one, you don't replace with names and faces. It's just it's not definite, it's not defined, it's anyone, or someone.
So does that make it not really a pronoun?
No, it just makes it an indefinite pronoun. If you just put pronoun, that's fine.
So how would this apply to John's readers?
Or John. Thank you. I was just reading James, love of the world is enmity with God. Where do you go, Matt?
Shag had a question. How does that apply to your readers of this letter?
Oh, it wasn't really a question.
It wasn't really a question.
Oh, wasn't it?
He said.
I said James. He was correcting me.
Oh.
Matt was actually correcting you. I just
No, but you know what? The key to good humor is to sit close to somebody funny who doesn't like to speak loud enough. And just repeat what they say. Okay. How are we doing here? You do love world or things. We need an object line, right? For the direct objects.
Wow.
And make sure your object lines, whether they are objects of prepositions or direct objects, only go to the line, and your crosses go through. Okay. World or things of the world.
Circles or square.
Oh yeah, great. Does this get a box or a circle?
Box.
Because it is a coordinating conjunction.
Don't forget the N.
The who?
The N.
Nor.
Oh, the nor. Yeah.
Not plus or.
That's it. All right. It's like goodbye is a contraction, right? What is goodbye short for in English?
Leave well? What is the etymology of that?
Oh, God be with you.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God be with you. Oh. I'm going to start saying that. Goodbye.
Bye. Nobody, and that's a good example of, like, the etymology. We don't really intend this. So if this were, like, a Greek word, and you said, oh, I'm going to find out what goodbye really means. We're going to get into this word study fallacy today, but it would be like saying, oh, yeah, well, it comes from God be with ye. So here in this passage, it clearly means God be with ye. When it doesn't, we just mean goodbye. You have to get into the mind of the speaker and what he intended. The speaker may have no idea about the history of a word and not be intending that as its meaning. So you can't import this meaning into that. Okay, that's for later. All right. You do not love. The love of the Father. Okay, the love of the Father is.
And then I didn't know what to do, so I was a little lost.
Okay. You have two adverbs. What do adverbs modify?
Verbs.
Okay, good. And your only verb here is. So you do not, and you do this prepositional phrase. If you did something different within him, is what kind of a verb?
To be
verb. Is that transitive or intransitive? Anybody use those words?
Intransitive.
It's intransitive. What does that mean?
It doesn't mean.
Yeah, it's not conveying action. It's not saying, you know, I kicked the dog. It's not. There's not activity happening. To be verbs don't take a direct object. You're not doing stuff. You're just being, right? So love is just existing, or in this case, not existing. Where? Well, you could do, this is either with to be verbs, an adverb modifying a to be verb can often function exactly like a predicate adjective modifying the subject. If I said, love is a verb.
God is love.
Well, that was a terrible example. Well, if I said love is a verb, we would do predicate adjective like that, right? If we said, no, this really is adverbial. There's not a way to make this a predicate adjective. I'm sorry, that was a tangent. I was going to give you two options. Just leave it right there. There are places where the predicate adjective and the adverb modifying it to be verb really do the same thing, but not in this case. Because we're not asking what kind of love. In him love. No. We're really asking, where is that love? It's adverbial. It's in him or not in him. Sorry about that. Scratch.
Estimated. We
the
had
last 10 minutes of what I just said.
I don't think there's any contractions in the scripture. Like, isn't. If it said isn't, Will we still break it down like that, word
yeah,
by word?
Yeah, just separate it out.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Good. I like what you did here, Scott. This gives us the relationship that the idea is love isn't in him. If that him, whoever that may be, anyone who might be him, loves the world. If anyone loves the world, then the love of the Father is not in him. And the way I would diagram this, clause by clause, is you do love, not and I like what you did with the word order, Scott, because it helps us see what's dependent upon what. Love is not if, and if you did a simple subordinating conjunction sign like that, that's fine. Anyone loves world. What I do with conjunctions, I mean with conditional statements, I just create a different symbol. Okay, I do that. And if you want to keep there's an advantage to keeping the word order of the text in your diagram. Diagramming means you're going to mess with the word order. but as much as possible, I like to keep the word order. It's like we say the things of world. We don't say of world here and the here, because it unnecessarily flips the word order. Does that make sense? I like to keep it the same as much as possible. In this case, you could do something like this. You do love, and then I would say this. If anyone loves, then love is not. The problem with doing it this way is your subordination isn't necessarily shown, because really this is subordinate to that. You wouldn't want to indent this and make it look like it's subordinate to that one, right? But these triangles tell me, oh, this is a conditional sentence. There's some sort of relationship between the if part and the then part of the conditional sentence. And if I were to take these two alone, I'd put this one first and subordinate that one to it, like we did over here.
Wait, so which one's subordinate to which?
Yeah, great question. Which one is subordinate to which?
If anyone loves, is subordinate to the love of the Father.
Yeah.
To love it is.
Why?
No. If anyone loves, is subordinate to love is not in him.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Why?
Okay. Yeah, why is that? Can somebody explain that?
What's the question?
Because it's a conditional phrase. It's the love of the Father is not in the one who loves the world.
Yeah. I will buy ice cream if I have enough money. They're not independent statements. There's a relationship there that one is subordinate to the other.
What is your main thought? And it doesn't matter where you put the if statement, if you put it first or if you put it second, there's one main thing that you're trying to communicate. The if just qualifies it. It puts a condition upon it. The condition is not the main idea.
So is that a conditional clause? Okay. So this whole thing here is a conditional clause?
Yes.
So would you say that anyone...
So this is conditional or subordinate to... So this clause.
That's what we're saying.
Can you say that it's both dependent? So anyone loves the world?
I would say conditional.
Conditional.
Just to reserve conditional for a specific kind of dependence, which is why I have a different symbol. Instead of just a regular circle, like a subordinate conjunction, it is dependent. One is dependent upon the other, and you know, it can be confusing in a conditional clause which one's dependent upon which. That kind of confuses the issue. So I don't know if I want to use the word dependent. Conditional is good. Because that helps me say this main idea is conditioned by this one.
Steve, do you still have pain? The question?
No, I think I get it. I just never figured that out.
whether I can repeat that or not reverse it.
Well, make up, not even right now, but I'm saying just in your own head, make up if-then statements that are simple ones and ask yourself, what's the main idea? And which one is the condition? And the condition is always subordinate to the other.
It, like, so the first sentence, do not love the world nor the things of the world, completely stands by itself. If,
yep.
With the next, there's obviously a relationship, but if we're saying that the love of the Father is not in him, is a main clause and could stand by itself. Uh-huh. It's just removing the first part, it seems like it still needs something else.
Well, it needs the condition that you're going to give it. It does. But, I mean, fundamentally, this line and this line are parallel. They're coordinated. Typically, when you don't have a conjunction at all between clauses, it's coordinated. I've tried to think of examples where that's not true. There probably are some. I haven't come up with any. Have you ever come across something where it's clearly a subordinate relationship without a subordinating conjunction?
No. I mean, the only way that the writer could show a subordinate thought with that is with a is with some type of a coordinating.
So between clauses, and when you'll notice your sentence diagramming turns into block diagramming, which is no different than what we're doing here, except you have bigger chunks and more significant relationships between clauses. Okay, but one of the things we'll do is watch, you know, clause conjunction, clause conjunction, clause no conjunction. And when you have no conjunction, it's coordinated.
Think about what's being said here. The first love in the first clause that's being mentioned, whose love is that?
Your love.
It's your love. So the first idea is, he wants to make a statement. He's drawing attention to you. You, the opposite, do not love, or you know, the world or the things. Then the love of the second clause, whose love is he talking about? This is the second. Pardon? No.
Oh, sorry.
Here's your main idea, right?
Yeah.
So he's trying to draw a connection between the way that you're loving or not loving, and then the Father's love. And
by Father's love, do we mean our love for the Father, or the Father's love for us?
That's a good question.
So that's one of those. This is a genitive relationship. This of, and whether it's.
And I just told you what I thought it was.
I think we'll end up there.
Yeah.
But it's not automatic.
No, it's not. You have to ask yourself good questions.
Oh yeah, I've had this question for a long time. In math, if you have like a if A then B, you can't do if B then A.
Correct.
But you can do if not B then not A. It's the same. If A then B is the same thing as if not B then not A. Mm-hmm. So if I said if the love of the Father is in somebody, then that person will not love the world.
Okay, that's a good logical implication, and you want to be careful with it. You want to be careful that it doesn't lead you to say more than the text is trying to say.
Right.
So it's good in math, but that kind of thing. You'll see hermeneutics books. Well, I've seen hermeneutics books that spend a great deal of time talking about logical construction and not making logical fallacies, because they intend to take X statement from Scripture and then, you know, make logical deduction, and now this is the truth claim I'm claiming, and then make logical deduction from that, and all of a sudden we're like five steps away from a verse, but we've got something that all these connections are real logical, but we're saying something the text doesn't say. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that.
That's called systematic theology.
That's systematic. Yeah. Yeah, that's called bad systematic theology.
Okay. Systematic theology stays as close to the X as possible.
So is if functioning as a conditional particle or a subordinating conjunction?
Whatever you put on that is fine.
Either?
Yep.
Okay.
And from here on out, if you'll use the triangles on your if-thens, just to set them up as different than other kinds of subordinating conjunctions, that's great. But either one of those that you called it is fine.
So you want to use the triangle?
I like to use the triangles.
And if we did the little dotted like Scott did, where would you put the then?
You, Because he reversed the word order, you don't need the then. Oh. The then is up here. You wouldn't say, then the love of the Father is not in him, if anyone loves. You just say the love is not in him, if anyone loves. But if you put this one up here, then you need to supply the then. If then. See, here I didn't have the then, but here I do. So whichever way you choose to go will determine whether you supply the then.
It's meant in the phrases up there, does if go inside the bracket or not inside the bracket? Do conjunctions go inside the bracket or not?
Keep them outside.
Outside
conjunctions that connect clauses don't go inside the clauses. And some of you were putting your conjunctions on the diagram, on lines. They don't go on the diagram. They're independent of any lines. So just keep them off the stick.
Sven, as you erase, can I waste your time?
Are you gonna talk about how to apply this?
No.
We should.
If you want to, go
ahead. But go ahead.
The way that these diagrams are set up, if you saw Spanish words, if that was in Spanish, somebody who spoke Spanish just diagrammed, you would be able to comment a lot on what is happening in the diagram, based on the diagram, even though you might not know what the words are. Because diagramming helps you to see function and relationship. You'd be able to say, I don't know what these words are, but clearly this clause is subordinate to that one, or this phrase modifies this, and this must be an adjectival phrase because it's, blah, blah, blah. You can make all kinds of comment on it without even knowing what the words are. And so what this does is this prepares you greatly for the best languages you're going to learn, which are the biblical languages, if you want. Because now, Smed could put, Smed could put up, Greek in a diagram, you could put up Hebrew in a diagram, and you would be able to talk about relationships. And this is why many seminaries, before you ever take Greek, beginning Greek or beginning Hebrew, they force you to take a grammar class, just a basic grammar class.
Why do you call them the best languages?
Because God spoke with
them. Well, that's why, or is because they're easy to
diagram? That was my descriptive that I put in front of it.
What part of speech is this?
It's a subject.
It's a noun or a pronoun, right? Or something acting like that. What part of speech is this?
Adjective.
Why?
Because it's not a pronoun. Or it's an article.
What's this? Which functions as an adjective? That's exactly right.
Okay. Helping verb.
Nope. And?
Main verb.
It's got to have both of them. Is this verb transitive or intransitive?
Transitive.
Why?
Because it's just
it takes a direct object. This isn't a to be verb, right? What are these?
Adverbs.
Adjectives. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, adjectives. Because they modify.
That could be an adjective up there, and then they would be adverbs, right?
No, this could be an adjective.
If it was a to be verb, then it could be an adverb.
Yeah, and then you'd have an intransitive verb.
And then all those would be adverbs.
That's an adjective all over adverbs.
Because adverbs modify adjectives. So.
As you guys were diagramming, one of your assignments as you diagram is to not leave your heart in the dust. As you were thinking through this passage, what stood out to you as you were diagramming? How did this have impact? Did anybody give thought beyond the diagram?
Well, yeah. I gave one part of trying to do that is not knowing that it's right. So therefore, it makes it hard to do that because you're like, then it becomes, I like that, but if that's not right, then I don't want to like that.
That's good.
It's like, without knowing...
So when you get your homework back corrected, then you can meditate on it.
You know what it was? I just stepped back and I just saw there was a big relationship between in the second sentence, that between our own love and the love of the Father. And I just thought about that relationship for a minute. It's good.
Just want to remind you guys to do
what's
that.
My meditation was, that can't be right.
Okay. Somebody give me the next one.
The end of all things is near.
Ooh, I like this one.
girl.
See, I did the first one because
I'm
thinking
that I just think.
I'm spending like 10 minutes on another.
I'm like, what is this?
Can you do this one thing?
That's,
what's modifying
I think
what?
I've practically read the entire grammar book trying to find one another.
I tried to find an example. I'm like, what is one another? Is one modifying another? Another modifying one?
For the purpose
one is
of
obviously I modifying another.
What
is
I put another modifying
a bubble ball?
I also had a hard time with a bubble ball.
Above all.
Forever.
I
nerd
yeah.
That was the last word that I gave
him.
Yeah.
In your
I need a fun word.
And I just slapped it in the middle of stuff.
Isn't it a
full disclosure down in the corner.
And
then I keep fervent. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, fervent a noun? Can you
love covers the multiple?
I looked it up. I looked it up in the dictionary.
So did I.
What's
an adjective?
Yeah.
I was like, crap. And it has no other
definition.
Yeah. It's just an adjective.
But I'm looking at it. I'm like,
thank you. Webster says so. Did you
come up with an
adjective?
Or I don't know if I was right. I think.
You,
okay. Let's start with our clauses. Give me the first clause.
I don't.
The end of all things.
Give me the second clause.
The center of prayer.
Yeah. Next clause.
Above all, to one another.
Next clause.
Love covers a multitude of sins.
So above all is not a conjunction.
Smith, what if you put above all outside of that clause?
Because you made it a conjunction?
You're kidding.
If you made it a conjunction, then you would be correct to put it outside of the clause.
Yeah, I don't get that.
But we're not going to do that. We're going to call it something else. Give me your prepositional phrases.
Of all things?
Of all things.
Of sound judgment and sober spirit.
Of sound judgment and sober spirit.
For the purpose?
For the purpose.
Okay.
Of prayer.
Of prayer. Of prayer.
In your love. For one another.
Above all. Yeah. Above all powers. In your love.
For one another.
For one another.
Above sins.
Okay.
Do you guys see how quickly you're going to catch on the line? I mean, you guys are just, this is light speed jumping and growth. Just watching
yeah.
this from the last
so,
few times.
So, what's our first clause?
The end is near.
And the end is near. What's our second clause?
B.
B. And what's our next clause?
Keep fervent.
What's our next one?
Love covers a multitude.
Does that not simplify things when you X out your prepositional phrases?
That'll preach.
That'll preach.
You already got your outline.
Yeah.
You don't need no time. Just get in the pulpit. Go.
Take this to the pulpit.
You guys are sitting out there diagramming.
Don't some people bring their diagrams with them?
You did that
didn't
one
that didn't
in 2 Corinthians 4, 17, 18. I did that. Okay.
Bro.
It's on the line.
Preach. That was awesome.
Okay, I'll remember that.
Is there anything in the scriptures that would not preach?
For me, the sentence I can't diagram. I won't preach that one yet.
Oh, what?
I'm not gonna be a preacher.
You have one you can't diagram, Scott?
So what?
You have one you can't diagram?
There's a lot of them I don't know how to diagram.
Oh, okay. Like Ephesians 1.
If you diagram.
I'm talking about for me. I'm not saying that there's not any that are undiagrammable.
The one that you meet that you cannot diagram.
The one that I meet that I go, what is that? That one won't preach yet. But by Sunday, I better preach.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you have to.
But you know, it's a process. It doesn't just happen.
I can see it now.
Hey,
we skip a verse. Wait a minute.
Yes.
Dang.
Who owes Pete?
What if you put an of in parentheses?
Bro, I did not know that.
After. What if you put an of in parentheses between the and sober?
Because you diagrammed it as two prepositional phrases. Keep it as one and split it. We'll describe how to do that.
Now,
I won't mark it wrong if you do that.
The participants are near.
That's
right. Adjective. I wasn't sure what to put as the part of speech.
It's a preposition.
Predicate.
If it's a preposition, what must it have?
See, I didn't realize that.
A personal phrase and an object of the preposition. So
I guess the part of the function reveals the part of speech. The part of speech could be one of several
things. Absolutely.
Do you interpret the part of speech from the function then when you do this?
Sometimes.
I thought about doing an adjective or preposition.
Why isn't it an adverb?
And then function.
Why isn't it? And this is a good example where we'll talk about the relationship of the to-be verb with that. The clause is this.
Wow.
And is near, or and is near. To be an adverb, it almost have to be that, nearly. You're asking, what kind of end is it? It's a near end. If you're saying the end is, let's change the verb. Let's change the verb to comes. You'd have to say nearly to make it an adverb. That's kind of awkward. But.
It's basically
and equally.
It's cool.
Yeah. I learned the predicate now.
Okay, as you look at this, guys, and Spen will get there. Where are our statements? Where are your look on your verb list? Where are your indicatives? And where are your imperatives? What order do they come in?
Indicatives come first.
What does that mean?
Wait, what was the question?
It means the imperatives.
Look at your verbs where you parse them out.
Mm-hmm.
What order do they? Where are the indicatives and where are
the imperatives? At the ends. Indicatives.
Yeah.
Or at the ends with imperatives and
that's what. Okay. And then what's the significance of that?
Imperatives usually flow from some statement of truth.
Paul states a true fact, gives a command, and then comes back to reiterate what is true.
So Paul wrote Peter.
I'm sorry.
It gives meaning to the
That's where you can find the author.
You're always safe if you say God. God said it. Did I give a subject? Oh yeah, subject. Subject. Okay.
So what was the answer?
I was just asking you. Those are things that you want to watch for, where there's indicatives. Statements being made and imperatives only flow out of indicatives somewhere. The indicative might be everything that had been said prior in a letter, but whenever you're looking for commands, it's just fun to watch for the relationship where they're at. And the problem with most of us is that we preach the imperatives more strongly than we do the indicatives. But the imperatives only stand if they are on an indicative. So don't skip over the... In other words, the important thing is to understand first, the end is near. You got to get that in your head before the imperative will make any sense.
If you were preaching this, and maybe there's no relation because it's two separate sentences, but would you try and answer what love covering a multitude of sins has to do with the end being there?
You would want to talk about, you definitely want to talk about what the relationships are between that.
Okay.
Upside judgments as a title.
Okay, well, let's talk through them.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure as I was writing it, so we'll. But yeah, I think that one is. Okay, definite article, subject. Of all things is modifying what?
End.
What kind of end? Yeah. Of all things end. Verb is near, predicate adjective describing
the verb is.
No.
No, I'm
and,
sorry, and.
Yes, and. It's a near end. Okay. B, what's the subject here?
You.
Okay. Of sound judgment and sober spirit. Here's where we get into the to be verb, either being modified adverbially. Let's say, this still is just a good example of a predicate adjective. Replace of sound judgment and sober spirit with an adverb. Somebody give me an adverb.
Happy.
Happily. Nope. Happily. Okay? You be happily. In other words, you exist happily. I'm commanding you to exist in a happy manner. Okay? That's adverbial. And this could be you exist in a manner of sound judgment and sober spirit. That gets real close to the same idea as the predicate adjective. But I'm going to lean adjectival because the of sound judgment and sober spirit, replace it with an adjective. Blue. You be blue. A blue you, right? Or something like that. Does that make sense? I want to ask the question, what does this modify? And with something complicated, replace it with a simple adjective or adverb to help decide.
So it's not modifying B, it's modifying you?
I think so. The difference between those two with a to be verb is often not very big. The chasm between adverbial and adjectival. When you have a to be verb, mm-hmm. It's usually not very big, but in this case, I think there's enough of a difference to lean adjectival.
I'll be interested to watch a diagram then.
Okay.
That'd be good.
Great. See. For the purpose, I think that's adverbial, modifying what? B. Because what question is that answer?
B, how?
How? How will you be?
Why?
Why?
Be why?
Be why?
Or why be?
Why be?
Good.
Or why be 40? Okay.
You
yeah,
be.
That answers
you
why. Be. Prayer. Of prayer. Adjectival modifying what?
Purpose.
Purpose. Okay. Above all, I have it listed adverbial. What is that modifying?
Keep.
It's telling us how or to what degree, something like that.
I moved it to kind of help that keep above all fervent or keep fervent
yeah.
above all.
Put it in all the possible locations and talk it through in order to decide. Process of elimination.
Why is above all not anger? I mean, maybe just because it might be. I forget the word, the one that sounds like a profanity.
Expletive?
Yes.
Expletive.
Ho! Keep fervent. Because he's not just saying, hey, I'm trying to get your attention, keep fervent. He's actually saying to what degree.
Okay.
More than anything else I've said so far, or something like that.
So
is an expletive like your last possible choice?
Usually it's going to have an exclamation point. Yeah, and it's pretty rare.
Mm-hmm. What is fervent? I can't.
Okay. We'll talk about this. This is an interesting verb. Keep is normally a transitive verb, like keep a bank account or something. I don't know. It usually takes a direct object. Here, what is the direct object of keep?
Fervent.
No. Is fervent a noun? Give me
that's
the fervent.
That's what it is on my paper.
Kick the fervent. Steal the fervent. It's not a noun.
Fervent. Hold fervent. Still.
Yeah, this is another good example. What is what? Okay, keep what? What are you supposed to keep?
Yourself.
Yourself is the direct object. You keep yourself in a fervent state. You keep yourself fervent. Fervent is describing what? You. So keep is actually an intransitive verb in this case. It is actually functioning as a command for a state of being. You maintain a state of being fervent. Does that make sense?
So fervent modifies you, not like in the diagram?
It's going to function as a predicate adjective.
And fervent becomes a predicate adjective.
That's what you not only that, but it becomes a predicate adjective too.
So it's an adjective.
In the predicate. Not only that, but, okay. In your life?
Can we go back to above all for a minute?
Yeah. Yes.
I have that as a coordinating conjunction.
Okay.
Because it's...
like, subsequently...
Right.
Yeah.
Which would still function as an adverb.
And this is where you got to have a list of prepositional phrases.
Oh, yeah. It's a preposition.
You just It's just a preposition.
But,
okay. My wife, when we first started studying this, told me, you just think about a cloud and how you can relate to a cloud. And if you can be above a cloud or in a cloud or by a cloud, then it's preposition.
That's good.
Beside the cloud.
Or through a cloud.
Some that don't work. But
my wife told me, don't ask me, I'm horrible at
cloud. Therefore, you can be above a cloud.
The book said that it was a... conjunctive
after. Well, book's wrong. That's ridiculous. Just leave it. That's fine. if you put that, that's fine. But I don't know. I don't even know what to do with those words.
That's
subordinating and conjunction is fine. With your therefores.
And they have the purpose of as a phrasal preposition. They have all the different types of preposition, and then they have a phrasal category, and for the purpose of is one of them.
Yes.
What's a phrasal preposition?
I don't know.
Well, there's prepositions in a phrase.
Aren't they all?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what that means. If you put that, that's fine. let's start diagramming. We got to keep moving.
We can't get it.
Okay. End is near. Which end?
The
end.
You need your verb tenses.
Thank you.
Janet right now. She was way off. I'm like, no.
That was nice of you.
I need to do this now.
Yes.
You need to be going to bed. I'm tired.
B.
Oh. End is.
Take notes from
near.
He's a deacon.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't think.
Oops, I forgot all. Oh, nice.
Therefore, so I'm going to end here. B. Okay, now we've got this predicate adjective that's a prepositional phrase. What do we do with predicate adjectives?
We do this, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you did this, if you made the whole thing adverbial and put it under B, I'm not going to mark that wrong. Okay? You can do that. The idea is going to be the same, and it's actually easier to diagram it as an adverbial prepositional phrase than it is to do a predicate adjectival prepositional phrase. It's just kind of... I've never seen how somebody else does it, so, you know, I just try to do the best that I can with that. And it's something like this.
Compound.
Yeah. How have I done that before? Yeah, I think I just leave it on the line. Of, what is it, judgment, mm-hmm. and spirit, and sound, sober, and. Okay. If you put all of this under B, do all of that and put it on the line and still split it. Okay. I'd rather you split it when you can, because you have one use, then you supply the second use and do parentheses.
When you say split it, you mean do that like little so underneath it?
Because there's only one of and two objects. Objects.
You still need the object
line.
Yeah,
I did it under B.
You still need the object line. Yep.
So you have to split it and provided the of.
Okay, and that's okay. I'd rather when you can just split it, because you've got one usage to do that. So... why be? For purpose? Which purpose? The purpose? Which purpose? The of prayer? Purpose. Make sure you have all your object lines in there. Okay. You keep predicate adjective fervent.
You indented the "you keep"?
I did not.
You didn't?
It's well, maybe I did.
Are you going to keep it to the left?
Uh-huh. There's no subordinating conjunction here.
No, but you're not going to bring it back out?
Oh, yeah, good question. That's an exegetical decision we need to make. I made the decision already without asking you. I'm sorry.
I forgive you, Smith.
Okay. This. You know what? I'll put that arrow there, and we'll just talk about that. Okay. Because that is, I shouldn't have just made the decision. We should leave it ambiguous for now. You keep fervent. Above all. Now, where does in your love go?
Keep
under keep.
Yeah, is it keep in your love yourself fervent, or is it describing the kind of fervency, an in your love fervency, a for one another? Well, no, that's then that for one another love.
I said that keep fervent was the verb, so I didn't have that problem.
Okay, great. And you brought up something. If you put it over here, if you put it in, what did we just say? In love. If you put love in over here, that's fine. And I'm going to tell you, if you put in love over here, that's also fine. Why would I say that? Because this is an intransitive verb. This is a state of being verb. So if you're telling me in what realm to be fervent, in your love realm, that's fine. Or if you're telling me to be fervent, what kind of fervency, and in your love fervency, you're saying the same thing. That's the funky thing about intransitive verbs. If this was just be instead of keep, you be fervent, you be in your love fervent, works essentially the same as you be fervent where? In your love. It's adverbial either way, because you got an adjective or a verb. And the to be verb is just a state. So you're saying the same thing. You can put it either place. Don't put it both, but put it either. Or if keep fervent was your verb,
cheater. I have bigger problems.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, in Greek or Hebrew, that's often the case.
If you
is that the case
it,
there?
That's what I was thinking it might be.
If you put it under keep, could you leave room to say at that point that fervency does not modify in your love or have a relationship within your love?
Well, no, you wouldn't necessarily be saying that because, again, this is be. This is it's basically an intransitive state of being verb. So you'd be saying the same thing. You're still talking about... You wouldn't divorce this from the idea of... you wouldn't divorce the idea of fervency in love, either place you put it.
Okay.
You're not making an exegetical decision, a meaning decision there. You're just trying to figure out where to place it. Scott, is it one word, keep fervent?
That's what I'm looking for. I'll let you know in just a moment.
Okay, great. And that's very likely. What kind of love? Your love. What other kind of love? The for one another love. So for another... Which another? One of them. Or whatever. Because. Now, because love covers a multitude of sins. Subordinating conjunction. Is it subordinate to end is near?
No.
Is it subordinate to be, you be? Or is it subordinate to you keep?
Probably the one with love in it.
Probably the one with love in it. Why is that? Because here, love is not a verb. Love is a subject. Right? Regardless of what DC Talk says.
the keep and covers.
Love is a verb, subject, or adjective.
Okay. So, and you see how we make that decision? Subordinate to all of them and decide. End is near. The end is near because love covers multitude. Right? Be of judgment and spirit because love covers a multitude. Right? Or keep fervent in love because love covers a multitude. Just walk it through. Try every option. It clearly subordinates to this last one. So, love covers multitude.
I nailed that last phrase. Oh, dude. The rest of it, though.
Okay. What is B?
What was it? Keep verb and it's not one verb.
It's you got a verb and an adjective.
You got a.
Is it a reflexive?
Isn't a contest a? Isn't that a participle?
Have.
Having. And that's the adjective for.
Yeah.
For.
Yeah.
So it's not even a.
Yeah. Having yourself. Interesting. B.
Present imperative.
Present. Imperative. Keep.
Present imperative.
Present imperative.
If you put active there, that's okay. You can have active or a dash. Implied there is keep yourselves. Again, that's implied. It's just one of those funny words. It's a transitive verb. It's a transitive verb being used intransitively. You can put either one. Covers.
Present active indicative.
Present active indicative.
What is the force of the or what is the fundamental meaning of the present tense in English?
It's happening now.
It's currently. Yeah, ongoing, current, continual activity. Okay, the same thing's true in the Greek present tense.
Now, if you had you kept verbal, would that be the voice would be? Could you have a past?
You would still have option? You would have past, and then you'd still have the same thing here.
Okay.
If it was has kept, have kept. It'd be
yeah, what is have kept?
As
perfect.
It wouldn't be imperative anymore.
Yeah, you couldn't. You can't have a perfect imperative.
And if it was love is covering,
it'd still be a present.
Would it? Can't.
Yep. Perfect is coming. Just is the helping verb, and covering is still the main verb. Is covering is the whole verb.
Has been covering is that past?
Has perfect? Been covering. It's present. Is just
has been.
Has been. You. Oh yeah, that's just simple perfect.
You had been.
Had been is past perfect.
Okay.
Will have been.
Future perfect.
What do we call?
Have been covering is what you guys called past progressive last time, or the simple imperfect.
Is that what we? That's what I was going to ask. What do we call in here progressive?
If you call it, that's fine. That's new terminology for me, or terminology I haven't used in a long time, and that's fine.
What is your terminology?
I use imperfect.
Imperfect.
Because that's what you'll use when you get to Greek.
Okay.
Everybody clear? Anybody need a photograph?
Oh,
okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Pass them in. I do, and I'll staple it. If you have separate sheets, put your name on both of them. Shag, I'm getting good at writing your name.
You're a teacher.
I thought about that. How many times have you said?
Because I've got the name.
Yeah.
What's your name when you did? Oh,
that's funny.
Yeah. You know, the teachers are the absolute worst students.
Yeah, the OS4 on
you put a bunch of teachers together in a room trying to teach
Zoom
things. They're doing hammering and drawing, talking.
Oh, it's Zoom's even before you take that school.
Yeah.
I'm copping that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
know, once you write something.
How many are in there?
12 per folder. You can have up.
But it shows you the little icons.
Yeah.
All right.
I never write anything.
Sure. Let's talk about words.
Are we keeping these?
Yeah, you can keep it. You should just turn in a card that says I did it.
Does the card say?
It's a completion grade only.
So okay.
You should self-correct it. You should have 100% because you corrected it.
Can we talk about the indention maybe afterwards?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Thanks, Matt.
Or
yeah. Okay. We need to decide what this is coordinate to. You keep first. Is it coordinate to you be of judgment and spirit, or is it coordinate to end is near? And Matt, talk it out for us.
Well, I put it coordinate to you be just because it's got the same subject.
Okay.
And because the rest of the passage kind of has a similar command, kind of.
Okay.
So I wasn't really sure.
So talk it both ways. Say the passage both ways.
The end is near, therefore keep fervent. And the next statement would be, you keep.
Okay.
You
so leave out the subordination.
The end is near.
talk about the two main things all the way out to the left. End is near,
and you keep fervent.
You keep fervent. Okay?
You keep fervent.
That's one way. Or, end is near. Therefore, be and keep. Those are your two options. Okay. Now, you just said what helped you at least lean one direction was the parallel nature of we've gone indicative, therefore, two imperatives and one reason. Okay.
Is that a valid reasoning?
That's valid reasoning. Yeah, the parallelism helps. It helps. The other things that might help us are not only the grammatical parallelism, but also the ideas that are being said there. Does it make sense for Peter to have a point, a therefore, another point, and a reason? That's a conceivable grammatical construction. But what are these two points? The end is near, and I'm going to tell you something you need to do. It seems better to fit. The end is near, so I'm going to tell you two things to do and one reason to do that last one.
What would mitigate against that?
Yeah, what would push it the other way?
That there's no conjunction between the two therefores.
Well, if you had... because the end of love covers a multitude of sins lined up with the end is near, it would be kind of like the poetry that we just read about. I don't know that that's
okay.
Possible to do.
Yeah, is this a poetic section?
No.
Okay. It's not that prose can't ever be poetic, but get really scared when somebody in a didactic section or a letter or a narrative or something other than clear poetry starts saying this is poetic in order to make the grammar do something funny. You should be terrified of that. We'll talk about genre starting on Tuesday. Scott, say again what you were saying. There's no conjunction between the two command statements.
There's no conjunction here.
Okay.
And oftentimes, I'm guessing in the Greek there isn't one. I should have looked at it. And so you have to have, and I'm just going through Ephesians and Paul. Most often, when Paul wants to show coordination, he does so with a conjunction. And so I don't know the flow of the way Peter writes and what he's doing.
Well, it can only be coordination. We're just trying to decide where.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know. Parallel coordination with the verb.
Whatever's the closest. Right, so,
yeah.
Yeah. Proximity.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I think you have legitimate. We have big questions to answer.
So, in other words, since there's no and here, that puts a little bit bigger of a period here, and may push this out.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
My question would be: it's very balanced. Then, like you said, there's a statement with a therefore, and with a command and a reason.
Yeah.
And it's almost chiastic because you have a indicative, imperative, imperative, back to an indicative. So I mean you got some
chiastic.
The only problem with the chiasm here is this is out to the left and this one's into the right.
True.
If this came out and did an indicative,
but are there not times when you can see a chiasm that's not grammatically dependent or that way, but idea.
Yeah, isn't but usually those ideas still do. They often. Maybe, I don't know.
Okay. I don't know either. That's okay.
I'd be tempted because this comes under here. Yeah. Because of the subordination here, I don't really look at this to make a decision about the outside structure. Right. Because of the subordination, this is very much a part of this.
Right.
So when I'm looking at block diagrams, if I've got main ideas, and if we're in Paul, we've got all kinds of telescoping subordination. You know, when I get to main ideas, I'm not looking at this. I'm just looking at these two.
Yeah.
So that leads me to put this back over here. And one way to ask this on the idea side of things is Peter saying the end is near, so I want you to keep fervent in your love? Or, and we'd have to go outside of, we'd have to go back to verse 16 and before. I can't even off the top of my head tell you what's there. Is this keep fervent in your love related to something outside of the end? You know? And that might help us even better than internally, is what's immediately ahead of this. Anybody have it open?
So you can't, go ahead, Matt. A new command?
But starting in the previous verse?
Yeah, what's ahead of that?
For the gospel has for this purpose been preached even to those who are dead, and though they are judged in the flesh as men, they may live in the spirit according to the will of God. The end of all things is near, therefore, be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer.
Okay.
I don't know
if
that.
Yeah, so if the stuff outside there, if I'm going to bring this out, if I'm going to bring out you keep fervent in love out to the left, I need to essentially say it's independent of that. Does that make sense? Scott, would you agree with that? Like, for this to come out to the left, we have to be able to look past this and coordinate it in a way that this is really related to what's ahead of us.
And that doesn't look
good. And I don't think that fits.
And so would it be accurate, to say that you're really starting a new idea, therefore it's kind of like a new paragraph?
Yeah, you'd have to say this is a new paragraph if you did that.
Chapter 1 says, since you've purified yourself and obeying the word, love one another fervently with a sincere heart, which is kind of a similar wording anyway. Would that play into how you try to place it?
It's a little distant for it to have a grammatical bearing. For it to have an idea bearing, it might play into it, but it might not. He might, in the first chapter, be giving one reason. Hey, I'm gonna talk to you a number of ways about how you need to love each other, and in chapter 1 he's talking about, hey, this came to mind, and so yeah, you gotta love each other. And here he might have a totally different reason, meaning, hey, the end's coming, so love each other. So it might or might not. Near context is better than distant.
Are the best clues to say that those are parallels the fact that they fundamentally are both, you know, have the same subject and are imperatives? Like,
I think that's strong.
It flows very clean.
I think that's strong. It's not a deal killer, but that's strong.
And there's even one.
It never
more.
Crossed my mind to put anywhere else, so I'm kind of like,
the paragraph point was a good point too. You'd have to make a new paragraph.
You'd have to bypass this, make it not relate to this, make it a new paragraph related to what's bigger in the context.
But there are no paragraphs in Greek, right?
No, in fact, it's not even periods or capitals, or it's all just a bunch of letters crammed. They were originally all capitals crammed in.
So the paragraph isn't an interpretation.
Were you going to say there's another?
It's how we use a paragraph in
Greek.
Be hospitable to one another. He seems to be firing off. He seems to be firing off commands.
Out of this indicative.
Flowing from the therefore.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's jump into words. Here we go. We got 15 minutes. That's all right.
You know what, though? This, I need that.
Yeah.
I can read this.
Yep. Well, I hope you can read this. So we'll talk through.
I can read this.
So we're going to talk about a number of hang-ups that we typically fall into, pitfalls we fall into when we do word study. There are more than these, no doubt. We could probably invent some more pitfalls. But here's a few just to get us thinking about it. Number one, plugging in a definition of a word without thought to its context. What does the word fear mean? Somebody give me a definition of fear. Don't look it up yet, Matt.
Hold your horses.
Okay. Apprehension, terror. Yeah, okay. Now set it in its context in Psalm 19:9. What does the fear of Yahweh mean? Now what does it mean?
Terror of Yahweh.
Okay.
I'm scared of God.
Okay.
Reverence.
Is it the same kind of terror as terror of lightning or great white sharks or something like that? There's a different flavor, right? There is a relational
fear. But it's not. I mean, I can't get away from a great white shark, and I can't reason with him, and I can't do what he wants me to do. But
great white sharks are God.
No, but you're right. It doesn't
only in a water situation. Fear, in a land situation.
We don't rewrite the word fear simply because the object of our fear is Yahweh, but it does give us a different kind of flavor because of who the object is. Now read Psalm 19:9 and tell me what fear means.
Fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever.
Okay, fear of the Lord is clean. Now what does fear mean?
Clean.
Fear is clean.
It's pure.
That's what it says. Okay, now read the verse before it. And tell me what fear means.
The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart.
Okay, what's parallel to fear?
Precepts.
And what else is parallel to fear in this text?
Commandment.
Commandment. What else is parallel to fear?
Rules.
Rules. What else is parallel to fear?
Law.
What else is... maybe that's it. So now what does fear mean?
All those things.
Rules and laws. And
doesn't fear here mean Bible? Does it mean the Word of God? Isn't that the theme here in Psalm 19? Isn't Psalm 19 saying the Bible is fill in the blank, enlightening the eyes. The Bible is blank doing this. The Bible is blank doing this. The Bible is blank doing this. As opposed to the first half of Psalm 19, which is space does this. Giraffes do this. Natural revelation does this. Now, notice the word for God used in the first half of Psalm 19. It's Elohim. It's God. What is the word for God used beginning when special revelation starts?
Yahweh.
Yeah. Yahweh. The relational, covenant-keeping God of Israel with his personal name. Now we start special revelation. And here you would never open your dictionary and see the word fear and replace it with Bible. But here you must, because that's what it means. And when we talk about genre, we'll talk about Hebrew poetry and what it's doing there and why it does things like that.
Why would he use a word that's so different? Like,
when do you use words that are just so different?
Yeah, is the purpose to change the meaning of fear, or is the purpose to color our view of the Bible?
A little bit of both. It's the only place I know of where fear means Bible.
So he doesn't want you to think of his Bible without thinking of what?
Him.
Power.
That's good, bro.
So we can't take just some definition of fear and insert it into Psalm 19:9 and come up with our meaning, because it doesn't mean that there. It only here means Bible, right?
I don't usually like to announce
my guests,
but you guys have lined up a lot of neurons for me today.
See you, Steve. Thank you. Okay, another pitfall. Importing all or too much of a semantic range. Think about the English word board. What does board mean?
A plank.
Piece of wood. A plank.
Plane.
I'm sick
to
of
get
this.
On a plane.
Group
what?
Of people.
I'm sick of this.
A group of people. What? Well, how does a group of people? Where do we get elder board?
A type of game.
Where do we get that? Yeah, board's an adjective. A board game. Okay.
From the table.
Okay. Old English, a table was a board based on the planks it was made out of. So the people sitting around the table came to mean the board of trustees, board of elders. What does it mean to be supplied room and board?
Housing.
Living.
A bed to live in and a table to eat on. Right? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to go on board a ship?
Walk up a board.
Walk up a board or stand on the planks of a ship? What does it mean to go overboard?
You leave the
board. What does it mean to board a plane? Planes aren't made of boards. Okay? But we have, like, so the semantic range of board is huge. Adjectives, verbs, nouns, all with totally different meanings. You cannot import every meaning of board into a singular usage, right? Boy, are we tempted to do that in word study. Man, I found all these cool definitions. It means all of them. No, it can't.
Or I really like this one.
I really like this one. It means one of them. And the exceptions there, figures of speech like puns, double entendre. But be careful. Don't assume double meaning unless the author is telling you, hey, I mean two things. And that's rare. That is rare. Do the hard work. Be an investigator. Figure out the one meaning that the author intended. If he intended two meanings, he'll let you know. Okay, I don't do double entendre without entendring it, without intending with it. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm telling you a joke, even if it's super, super dry, and I'm, you know, if I pull a Matt Dodd grammar pun or whatever, we all laughed because we knew he meant two things. Right? Anyway, next one. Importing the most exciting or the favorite part of a semantic range. This is what Tyler just said. If I told my kids, have a ball, two of my children would go put on long dresses and they'd come downstairs and start dancing. Emmett, I hope, I pray, please, he'll pick up a football, right?
Yeah.
We're working on that. Sometimes he plays dress up.
How do you stop him from doing that?
We talk about it a lot. We really do.
Yeah.
Emmett, take off the tutu. I'm serious. If my kids are not concerned with what I mean by what I say, they'll be tempted to insert their favorite meaning. Right? Don't insert your favorite meaning of a word. Okay. Root fallacy. This is the determination of a word's meaning by appeal merely to its component parts or its history, its etymology. Pineapple. Right? We do not... A pineapple is not some sort of apple we get from pine trees. Right? And a butterfly is not a fly that likes butter or that eats butter or is made of butter. Right? So it's root. The root meanings of those words are not found in their parts stuck together. I don't know what the etymology of... Who started pineapple? Why'd you call it that? That's retarded. Maybe spine apple, spiny apple. That might be a better name. But
maybe
not.
It was that, and then somebody dropped
could
it.
Could be. Could be. Yep.
The original Hawaiian.
Can you go get a spine apple?
That's an impressive.
Can you go get us spine apple? Get us pineapple? Yeah, maybe. Okay. John 3:16.
Wow.
We looked at that last time. What in the world? Yeah, I just forgot how to do that.
There you go.
Okay. Okay. Only, and then the Greek word that sometimes people think this comes from is genao, to beget. It could come from genomai, which simply means to be. And nobody really knows. Does this mean only begotten, meaning the only son that has been begotten, or does it mean the one and only, the special, the unique, the only one being type of thing? Which is it? Do we construct our Christology around the begetting of the son? Or do we construct our Christology around his uniqueness? What do we do with this word? Somebody read Hebrews 11:17.
By faith, word,
go ahead.
By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son.
Only begotten son. Was Isaac Abraham's only begotten son?
No.
Who else did he have?
Ishmael.
And?
Ishmael? Wait, no.
He had another wife, Keturah, right? And other kids. That's kind of a weird episode in Abraham's life. Okay, so the point there is, are we talking about uniqueness, one and onlyness, specialness, or are we talking about a begetting? And if you take monogenes and just try to take it apart, and you assume that it comes from genao, you get this only begotten thing, which is what the King James gave us, which a lot of translations just followed. By the way, in the early 20th century, to go against, consider the translator's hurdles, and Matt, in PNG, you won't have this problem, which is great. This is one of the things you won't have to worry about. If I mess with the 23rd Psalm, the beloved Psalm that everybody knows and has memorized, and I start, translating it the way it should be translated, I'm going to offend some grandmas. I'm going to offend some people who are saying, he's messing with the Bible, right? In the NIV, they didn't translate only monogenes, only begotten, like the NASB does. They translated it one and only, which might be better. But some people actually took issue with the NIV over that issue. Oh, you're messing with the Son.
And there's a kind of a hubbub about that.
Right.
Let's keep going. I thought I had another example. Okay. And anachronism. Anachronism. You know what anachronism is? This is reading the present back into the past. Anna Kronos. Kronos having to do with time. Anna. What is Anna? Down from? Against?
No, it means back again.
Back again. As opposed to diachronos, diachronic, which means through. Diachronic word study means the study of a word's usage as it progresses over time, like bored or whatever. Anachronic means you got the time thing wrong. Okay, you're doing it backwards. So an anachronistic use, man, this has been, how many of you have heard the gospel is dynamite? You guys ever hear that sermon? I've heard that sermon before. Romans 1:16. I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God. What is the Greek word for power there?
Dunamis.
Where we really get our word dynamite from that. So the gospel is dynamite. Now, was Paul thinking about dynamite when he wrote?
Absolutely. Power? Yeah.
Don't do that.
He was a prophet.
Don't do that. Somebody read 2 Corinthians 9:7.
Each one must give as he has made up in his mind, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver.
Cheerful. Hilaron. We get our, what word do we get in English from that?
Hilarious.
Hilarious. God loves a hilarious giver. Wow. You know?
That'll preach.
Yeah, don't.
Holy Spirit laughter.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't take an anachronistic meaning. Paul didn't mean hilarious. The word changed over time, and now we use it in a different way. The word presbyteros was used that way. The Greek church, the Eastern church, began to use that Greek word presbyteros to mean bishop, which meant an overseer over multiple churches. They built their church hierarchy. Now they have a Greek word from the New Testament to supply it. The problem is the Greek word didn't mean that in the New Testament times. It came to mean it 200 years later in the way that the Eastern church fathers wrote about it. Mm-hmm. So now they've got, I've got biblical support for church hierarchy, for the Presbyterian form of government. Presbyteros.
Which is translated?
Elder. Overseer, bishop, shepherd. Those are all synonymous titles for the same office. Unless you take a hierarchical church form of government and use an anachronistic use of the Greek word to make the New Testament mean something other than what it meant. Okay. The opposite of anachronism is obsolescence. That's using a definition of word that's no longer in use at the time of writing. Our English word prevent used to mean to go before and to prepare the way or to assist someone. Prevent, to pre-go, to go ahead of. Make straight the way of the Lord, you know, to pull a John the Baptist. Now it doesn't mean that. Prevent defense. You're not preparing the way for the other team to score points, right? You're trying to get in the way. Unless you're the...
That seems to be the best way to...
Actually, in that case, prevent might be help the other team score. Okay. Here's a good example. Kephale is the Greek word for head. For head. And egalitarian interpreters who don't want head to mean something like authority make it mean something like source or origin. And they'll appeal to something like the head of a river doesn't mean the authority over a river. It means the source of a river, you know, the place up in the mountains. The problem is, in order to get kephale to mean origin or source, you have to appeal to classical Greek lexicons, would deal with the Greek language 400 or 500 years before the New Testament was written. By the time the New Testament came about, it no longer had the shade of meaning for origin or source. It only had the range of meaning for authority, the one in charge, or whatever. So that's using an obsolete definition to come up with what the passage means. The next fallacy is used to get around the same issue. The only way to get to Kephale, meaning source or origin, as it relates to rivers, means it has to be singular rather than plural. And the only singular usage of kephale as it relates to rivers, where it actually meant the source of the river instead of the mouth of the river where it empties out, comes from an obscure 5th century BC Greek document that's legitimacy as a document is debatable, and the meaning of source in that document has multiple possibilities, and source or origin is not the best possibility. So that's the I want this passage to mean something other than the man is head of the woman as Christ is head of the church. I want the passage to mean something different than what it sounds like, so I'm going to support it with an obscure, debatable, hard to find, obsolete definition from an external source to the Bible. You know, don't do that.
And guys, listen, I mean, you're going to, most of this you can sniff out in the commentary. I mean, think about all that he had to just do just to explain that. You're going to come to a page, and all of a sudden the commentator is going to spend paragraphs developing something that's not even in the text. That you're going to be, you can get swept up in his scholarliness, and wow, he knows his, you know, classical Greek, or he knows his, why is he spending so much time developing something that's 4th or 5th century BC or AD outside of what the passage actually is saying? Not in every case, but anybody who doesn't want the text to mean that has to do stuff like that. So, I mean, just, as soon as they do that, you just start running your little flag up the pole that's warning you, something's fishy here. Why won't he just tell me what's going on right here? You understand?
So yeah, if somebody's appealing to classical Greek rather than Koine Greek, the lingua franca of the New Testament, get scared. And this is what's really terrifying, like in the religion departments at major universities, or you get people that are like classical Greek scholars that know Attic Greek or whatever, and then bring that into the New Testament. And it would be like reading Beowulf and thinking you understand, you know, Ebonics. You know, we may be speaking the same language. Or who's in PNG right now?
Meredith
just went to Papua New Guinea as Cassidy was coming back. When she was in Australia on her way out there, some security guy was asking her questions, and she was like. And the man said, "Do you speak English?" And she said, "Oh, yes, I do." But she had no clue what he was saying in Australian. Oh. For like a whole minute, he was like asking her questions, and she was deer in the headlights. there's not necessarily transfer from classical Greek to Koine Greek. Applying the fruits of successful word study to every other usage of the same word. Okay. Again, this is ignoring the immediate context usage of a word or a specific author's use of a word. What does justification mean? Somebody give me a definition of justification.
To declare righteous. To be declared righteous.
Okay. To be declared righteous. To justify. To declare or put forth as righteous. Okay, that's a good definition that'll probably fit just about everywhere. What does Paul mean by that in Romans 3? All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, verse 24, and are justified freely as a gift by his grace. What does Paul mean when he says, and we see that a man is justified? No, he doesn't say that. I just gave it away. Darn. What does Paul say? A man is justified by faith and not by works. Right, Galatians and Romans. What does justified mean there?
That definition.
Give me more.
Before God.
Okay. That's important. In God's courtroom, to be declared righteous. To be declared righteous by God. Okay? What does James in James 2 mean when he says, and we see that a man is justified not by faith alone, but by what he does?
Before men.
Yeah, to put forth as righteous still works, but before men. And the context helps us see that. Watch what James does over and over again. See this, notice this, look at this. He's not saying what God declares in his courtroom that nobody can thwart or do away with, but what people see. The audience is humanity. A man's faith is seen to be legit, set forth as righteous by what he does.
Good.
Okay. So justification's root definition can stay what it means, but don't go to James 2 and insert, God treats me as if I've never sinned and treats Jesus as if he sinned all my sins. Don't insert that definition into James 2, because then you'll be preaching different gospels. Which is why Martin Luther, who fought for justification from, you know, really rescued us by God's grace from the Dark Ages, called James a right strawy epistle. Didn't know what to do with it. Thought it might not even be canonical.
Didn't Calvin want it out of the Bible too?
I think it's just Luther. Calvin was okay with it. Another one is over-differentiated or flattened out synonyms. Read Psalm 32 or Psalm 51 and watch the way multiple words, even in English, are used for sin. Every Hebrew word for sin is used in both of those passages. And there are different nuances, different semantic ranges, and they can overlap. Here's the deal with synonyms. If synonyms meant if two synonyms had exactly the same semantic range, they wouldn't exist in a language. One would die out. Okay? Synonyms have overlapping semantic ranges. Sometimes it's really overlapping, sometimes it's not. In the case of Psalm 19, we saw a word with a semantic range over here being used for something it normally doesn't. And so the overlap is real small. Okay? But there's two errors you can do with synonyms. You can flatten them out and say, oh, they mean exactly the same thing, so we shouldn't see any nuance of difference between them. But oftentimes when an author uses them together in the same passage, he intends something different, even by synonyms. A different flavor. Flavor is probably the best word. So don't totally flatten them out, especially when they're used together in the same passage. But the other thing you shouldn't do is say phileo agape. Two totally different words for love that mean two totally different things. Agape always means Christ-like, sacrificial, selfless love. Phileo can never be used that, like that. Well, guess what? The whole deal with Tamar. And whoever the bad dudes were in that one, who's the brother that loved his sister and whatever, this Septuagint uses agape for his love for his sister. Well, you know, rape doesn't quite fall into the category of what we normally think of as agape love, so just be careful with that.
Isn't it 1 John, do not love the world?
Yeah, it might be, but you know, that wouldn't be as much of a stretch. But. Okay.
Is a lot of the, like, a lot of what you explained comes from really understanding the, like, biblical language. Like,
yeah, remember really the second. Remember the second half of our class is going to be the how-to. And when we get to word study, we'll talk about how to get at this information from the English.
It's a lot of trust in your lexicons and your commentaries.
If you're gonna make your business preaching, teaching, translating, you should aim at the biblical languages. Or talk to Jacob about how to get at them best from Logos. Yeah. But we'll talk some about that, about how to get that in English. Otherwise, yeah, you are trusting your tools and your resources. And the more you know, the more you know where to trust and where to be skeptical. But this is a lifelong deal. Like, I took Greek in seminary so that I could have the tools to learn Greek for the rest of my life. I'm not there. I'm very dependent on tools. So, it's a matter of degrees.
Will GBI offer any? What are the next classes that GBI may offer?
Greek.
There's PE.
Sorry.
Yes.
Archery.
Actually, who's done that one?
I'll take archery.
You guys laugh. I'm not kidding. There is PE, and it's and double meaning. It's personal evangelism and physical education. Josh and I played racquetball every week and rode the bus and shared the gospel with people every week. And we did it together. So we said, okay, let's go do PE. Greek. There you go.
What, Greek, really?
Yeah.
Is it the next one?
It will most, again, this is going to be dependent on Matt Dodd. Everything revolves around his world.
Oh no. Josh is ready for it.
So yeah, Josh is gonna take Greek in the fall. So if you were available to be part of the class time, we'd have a further discussion about that, because taking Greek at GBI, I think we need to have an elder discussion about who we asked to be a part of that. It's aimed at pastoral training. I'm not opposed to opening it up beyond that. Someday, whether we do that this fall, I don't know. But most likely Matt's going to be taking Greek in January, potentially. So it's coming.
He doesn't want to start August 6th.
And we just like Josh cutting his teeth and